Welcome to Rarefied Air, Stories of Inspired Service. Our host, John Palladino, Head of Client Services at InterSystems, will use his 40 years of experience to show you how to build a successful customer service program and highlight stories of innovation with customers. Join us as we explore the past, present, and future of service, from AI's promise to the enduring power of the human touch.
We live in a world where customer needs are constantly evolving and the pace of change is accelerating. So how do leaders and businesses navigate through these challenges to drive meaningful innovation? I think we have the perfect guest to dive into this topic with us. With me today, Mr. Jeff Fried. Jeff Fried is a director of platform strategy for InterSystems. Prior to joining InterSystems, Jeff worked for Microsoft. He was the head of product management for Fast Search and Transfer at Microsoft. Previously, he was the CTO for BA Insight, and Jeff holds 3 degrees from MIT, all in applied math and computer science. So, Jeff, you've come back to Cambridge, full circle. You're back next to MIT.
It's ironic and very fun. And I want to say first, John, I'm a huge fan of your podcast and of you. I'm delighted to be here. And coming back to Kendall Square, where I look out at MIT Sloan School right out of my office window, it's heartwarming after so much time here.
And you've had a lot to do with innovation. So in terms of customer needs, I have my own views, but how have you seen the changes in terms of what customers need and what they expect, especially across all the inflection points and changes in technology and continued innovation?
There's some things that haven't changed at all. I think there's good old-fashioned providing value to customers and being of service to them and building wonderful products. The principles have not changed. But the pace, as you mentioned, is so much faster. It used to be the average time from an idea to a first product introduction was 7 years. Now it's under one.
That's true. And it's shrinking even from there.
Yeah. So the other changes, I would say, go along with the megatrends. The cloud and now AI and generative AI have changed the way that our customers work, and that's changed their needs and their expectations. They're looking to us at InterSystems to help them with those transitions and to be not just with the times, but just a couple of steps ahead of them. As you know, I now lead a thing called the Innovation Acceleration Group.
Oh, tell us about that.
It's just a group of people within InterSystems whose job it is to catalyze everybody's creative juices and to have a process around innovation. And I counted really 5 different processes that we use. My favorite, which I think is near and dear to your heart, is what I call customer-driven innovation, where we're working sort of hand-in-hand with customers and partners as we figure things out and experiment.
That's the best way to innovate, I think. We've been talking about the pandemic for so long. In a way, I get tired of talking about it, except it really did prove that the pace of innovation can accelerate. And the lessons we've learned from COVID, I think we're still learning, from those 2 to 3 years that we went through that. Tell us about what your perspective is on the pace of innovation during COVID and maybe some stories about how we help customers.
I think the number one lesson for me during that was just speeding up. We power so many healthcare things around the planet that it seemed like we were involved in every hotspot. Our software was in the EMRs put up in the Wuhan pop-up hospitals. And they built in 2 weeks a whole hospital from the ground up, including all deployment of processes and software, things that would have taken 4 years. We powered the health exchange in northern Italy with Finito, and they were able to roll out things in a region that was really hurting super fast. Same thing in New York, same thing in California. So time after time, I think we and our customers learned just how fast we could move.
There are 2 interesting stories from New York. One was the head of a large group of hospitals in the New York City area, CEO said, if I wanted to build a new unit in the hospital, in the existing building, we would go out and get a business consultant to do a study. We would take a long time, 9 months, to publish that study. It would take the board and the management team months and months to make a decision, and then we'd have to start building it. And we made that decision in a day during COVID. Another New York story is a customer called HealthX. They're a health information exchange. So they're connected to the entire healthcare system in and around New York City. Pharmacies, doctor's offices, hospitals, ERs, you name it. And what became really important to the state of New York was to get accurate reporting. Now, they had asked all the hospitals to report on a daily basis about how many people were in the hospital, how many respirators did they have, you know, everything we know about. They couldn't get accurate information that was timely. But through HealthX, since they had connected all healthcare and kind of a, think of it as a data fabric, if you will, a health data fabric in New York City, they were able to get that information in no time. They had it. It's just putting it into a format that the state required. Of course, that format changed, but that's okay. They were adapting. But it gave them the opportunity to do really quick innovation to have a huge impact for the entire health systems around New York City.
Yeah, I love that. And those guys are still innovating like crazy. They're one of the foremost HIEs when it comes to machine learning, for example.
Really? I didn't know that. How are they using machine learning?
So they work with a partner of ours called HBI Systems to do population health prediction. What are the most at-risk populations, looking at health equity, looking at elements in infectious disease. And that's been very effective because at the end of the day, machine learning is based on data, and preparing your data well is what makes these kind of predictions much more accurate or even possible.
That's great. That's a story I didn't know. That's great.
Another story that was a lot of fun and a lot of stress was in Scotland with Lothian, one of the mega counties
there. Yes, in Edinburgh.
In Edinburgh. And everyone in the world had been waiting for vaccines. And when they were finally available, they opened up their call center to take appointments so people could call and come in and get vaccinated.
And I bet they were swarmed.
Well, the first day they were able to answer 4% of their calls.
Oh, gee.
So huge problem. We worked with them to stand up an online scheduling system that was connected into their hospital schedules. They're a track care customer, and they were able to build with us an online system with callbacks and the whole thing in 2 weeks.
Well, that's a fast pace.
So I think it taught our customers that they could be much faster. Maybe you don't do everything in 2 weeks, but and maybe you take a more careful route than when you're forced to do things quickly in a pandemic. But there's orders of magnitude increase in speed.
There's so many stories, mostly great stories. How about there was a customer in financial services, Jeff, and I can't remember the name. Was it Broadridge?
Probably Broadridge. Now, that's not really a pandemic story, but I think Broadridge is an example of a customer that I love working with that we innovated together. We have a fabulous data platform, InterSystems Iris data platform. And Broadridge came to us and said, we have a bunch of different applications and we want them on the same data. And that's what we call a data fabric. You know, the ability to reuse the same data for multiple applications, the ability to connect to or collect data. And we taught them how to do it fast. You know, they'd been building something on Amazon with 7 different Amazon services, which we were able to replace with one, with InterSystems Iris. And it not only was much simpler, but it was 9 times faster, and it took a third of the footprint.
Let's step back for a second. What exactly do you mean by data fabric? I understand it, but I doubt our listeners do.
It's a architectural pattern in data management that basically takes data from a variety of places and puts it under common governance and then reuses that data for multiple applications. So health information exchanges like Healthix are using a data fabric pattern.
But how would you compare it to, say, a data mart or a data lake or a data warehouse? I think those are terms people are more familiar
with. Yeah, it's a progression as people have learned how to manage their data better. So data warehouses haven't gone away. Data lakes grew up in part as a revolt against how straitjacketed data warehouses were. They took way too long. You had to know exactly how you're going to use the data before you put it in. And it didn't do well on unstructured data, whereas a data lake, like a Hadoop kind of infrastructure, you could just shove the data in, think about what you're going to do with it later. And that ended up largely being a disappointment because you collected a bunch of garbage and you had a huge sprawl or a data swamp. And a data lakehouse is also a pattern for storing things. So a data fabric is sort of the next step in that. Really what's different is it's not just about how you store the data. It's about how you use the data.
So in terms of what Broadridge needed, you know, coming back to innovation and customer needs changing, how would the data fabric really fit into innovation? You said we work with them together to build this out. So we were co-innovating?
Yes, for sure. This is an example of what I call customer-driven innovation, that we're working with them around what they needed. And often if you ask a customer or anyone what they need, they will think of a solution. And that solution is rarely the best solution. It's often just what they're familiar with. And if you can get people to really describe their problem, then you can come up with a much better solution. So their fundamental problem was an agility problem. They were getting new customers really fast, and they needed to stand up new services quite quickly. And every project just took too long to collect the data, to prepare it, to make a specific data mart for that specific data to make sure everything was right, then to build an application on top of it. So what they were looking for in a data fabric wasn't that concrete at the time, but it netted down to being more agile, being able to change direction, being able to do new things, and preparing the data once, bringing it into a common form, and then using it in lots of ways, which seems easy, seems natural, but it's actually hard to achieve that well, was the pattern that worked well for them. And we've subsequently, now every analyst on the planet talks about data fabrics. It's a huge hype term. And we have customers in every vertical and sub-vertical we work with who are using data fabrics now.
That's interesting. How would you say that Broadridge's needs have changed from a support perspective? I don't just mean product support, yeah, but the support we give them, everybody who's helping them.
There's a couple of things. One is, as the number of applications they want to do grows, they need a more diverse set of support because they're doing multiple things. The second is they're doing things in the cloud. They're running in AWS. That opens up new support potential. You can share your tenant with your vendor and get access to systems. It doesn't take months to provision hardware. It takes minutes.
And for our listeners, we're helping Broadridge manage these environments as well.
Yeah,
as a service.
That's really the next step, is that the expertise to run systems, to optimize them, to run it well, was something that Broadridge, they asked us if we could help with. That was an example of what's now a managed service to help people run inter-system drivers.
And that's definitely a trend we're seeing. So a lot of our customers, whether they're recent customers or long-standing customers, they're coming to us and asking us to manage their environments, whether it's in a public cloud or the inter-systems private cloud. And for end users, we've been doing this for a while. We've actually been hosting customers since 2007, so we have a lot of experience doing that successfully and have achieved great uptime and security, et cetera. But now there are software companies, people developing solutions saying, our customers can't manage the environment or don't want to for lots of reasons, and we don't want to. Could you guys do it? That's a growing part of our business where we're supporting different types of customers, both partners and users, system integrators, in new ways. We're providing that service that they don't have to worry about upgrades. They don't have to worry about security. They don't have to worry about backups. They don't have to worry about availability. We're providing that.
Yeah, I think it's a huge trend. It also opens up working with startups in a whole new way.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because they don't need to staff up an operations staff.
That's a really good point. Do you have a couple of examples?
Many, because over the last two and a half years, we've beefed up a startup program. Everything from starting with just a hackathon, like TechCrunch, where there's a team that has an idea, which is a pre-startup, into early stage funding, et cetera. We co-sponsor two health tech incubators, one with Amazon, one with MedTech incubators. And we have created one of our own called Celestinus, which is specifically for fire.
You should probably describe what fire is.
Yes, fire is the newest standard, which means it's 13 years old in healthcare.
Standards take a long time.
They do.
So it's a healthcare standard.
That is really lets developers work with healthcare data in a normal way. It's a REST-based API. It looks familiar. Our APIs for our fire service are easy for a developer to work with. And that's really a revolution in terms of the ease of entry.
So you'll find healthcare startups.
Startups and then help them grow. And we've now got, we're in our second year, we've had graduates, but they like working with our managed services or our cloud services, like our fire server, because they don't need an operations staff.
They just focus on building solutions. So what's interesting about this is we were proactive and anticipated customers are going to need access to fire to be able to build applications that connect to health data.
Yep.
And we were able to do that ahead of these startups needing it.
Yeah, and I think that customers, not just startups, but also large customers, value the kind of partnership that's sort of in our DNA at InterSystems. But if they could just say, we need to communicate with the health system, we need help navigating the standards, navigating how things work differently in different countries, we have that experience.
So we started this conversation talking about what you see as changing customer needs and innovation. If we can take the boring work away from them to free them up to do other things and have what they need before they need it, then we're meeting the changing needs.
We're seeing the same thing with AI. We now are experimenting with a service where we build the models. We work with the customers to make sure they work well in their clinical setting or their operational settings. We just had a very successful project around predicting no-shows so that you can staff more effectively. We're willing to do more of the work if that's what it takes to get to impact. And at the end of the day, my definition of innovation is taking the process by which you take an idea to impact. Ideas are cheap. Getting impact is where it matters.
So I consider you an expert in this area. So for listeners not familiar with, say, ChatGPT, they've heard of it, they've heard concerns, and I think all the discussions are good, by the way, from risk to advantage. How would you explain to somebody who's not familiar with machine learning or AI what this fourth generation generative AI really is?
How it works under the hood is less important than whether it's effective for you. And at one level, they're called large language models. They're simply predicting the next token, the next character in text.
Kind of like a spelling when I'm texting.
Like a spell checker.
Yeah.
But what's really new about them is scale. And everyone's used to Siri or other speech rec things. I was a CTO of a speech rec startup that sold to Microsoft, and similar algorithms. But what's different, instead of a Siri kind of thing or the neural net-based machine learning from a few years ago, which might have 24, 36 stages or facial recognition that might have 40 stages, these have 1 billion.
Wow.
So the experiment was, let's not change the structure. Let's just see what happens when it gets really big. You put an immense amount of data into these huge nets, and what emerges is really different behavior. It is the hot topic now with huge promise. It's also something you need to be careful of. We have a whole program in how to help our customers use generative AI responsibly, because like other forms of machine learning, it's very opaque. You don't know where the answer can come from. And if you play with a ChatGPT or a Llama 2 model for a little while, you'll be astounded by moments that seem like brilliance and moments that seem like utter stupidity. And the machine will come up with things that are just wrong. So you need a person in the loop, or you need to watch how you prepare the data in order to be effective with these. But that's, you know, we have a very active innovation program at InterSystems. In our developer community, we did our annual Grand Prix contest, and 4 out of the 5 winners were using generative AI.
Oh, that's not surprising, actually. I would have thought 5 out of 5.
It's very, very exciting. Yeah, and I think that's also part of the future of innovation. I mean, we've seen how macro things like the cloud change innovation or managed services. I think generative AI will be a co-inventor and a co-innovator with us and with our customers going forward.
You can bet on it. Well, Jeff, this has been fantastic. I've learned a lot. I really appreciate you spending time to join me in this podcast. And for the listeners, Jeff is somebody I really, really enjoy working with. He is excellent at explaining really complex things to people like me. And he's fantastic to work with. So it's been a true pleasure having you here for the podcast, Jeff.
Delightful to join you. Thank you so much, John.
I have a saying at the end of my podcast, and I'm going to repeat it for you in case you haven't heard it. It's so great to have a successful past, but it's even more important to have a future. And we have a bright future ahead. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. If you have any questions or want to hear from a specific guest, email us anytime at inspiredservice@intersystems.com. And when you're ready to unlock the potential of your data and experience the transformative power of support done differently, go to intersystems.com.